Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your amiable host, Ray Graff. We'll be discussing birds. Hello again and welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your cantankerous host, Ray Graff. We'll be discussing birds today on the program. Rich Guthrie is here to help answer your questions about them. A veteran birder, a former NCON specialist, and a former compiler of the Catskill New York Christmas Bird Count for the National Audubon Society, Rich is our go-to expert on birds. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also comment on Facebook at facebook.com/WAMC Radio. There'll be a little Vox Pop post there. Or you can tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop or email voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Ray. Glad to be here.
Last time we did the show, we were in the performance studio.
We were in a different place.
Yeah.
This is now a new different place.
This is the newly remodeled Studio A, which we now call the inside of the Death Star.
Well,
it's got all strange microphone booms and angled walls.
It kind of reminds me of a Radio Shack on board ship. Very secure, very enclosed.
Yeah. You feel comfortable here?
Right at home.
Oh, good. Excellent. Well, this one came in via email. This is from Mike in Kerhonkson, who says, sent this last time Rich was on, but you did not get to it, and that's true. It came in late. And this is the question Mike from Kerhonkson sends. This bird flew into my friend's house in Long Island. Hit so hard, it set off her house alarm. She wanted to know what kind of bird it is, and that's from Mike. Well, Mike, we printed out the picture. I printed it out. And before I hand it over to Rich, I'm going to take a stab at this one. I'm reasonably certain this is a parrot. This is, Rich, see if I'm wrong.
I'm going to take a good close look at this.
Okay.
It's a black and white printout of a picture.
I'm sure that's a parrot.
No, it's not. It's actually a hawk.
Oh, it's a hawk.
Yes, it has a parrot-like beak, but it's a hawk.
All right, fine.
And I can't see enough of it from the details here, but it looks like a young broadwing hawk, and that would be unusual for flying into a house onto Long Island.
But and fly with such velocity that it set off the house alarm.
Well, it's big enough. It's a motion. It will activate a motion detector.
Okay.
Given its size, but glad to see it's back out again. It doesn't look any worse for the wear.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, it's sitting on the porch railing, looking away to where it wants to go to next.
All right, Mike. Well, I'm glad we got to that one. I'm sorry that it was not a parrot, but thank you for your email. And the number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to the phones. Rich, it's Joanna in South Hadley. Joanna, you're first.
Thank you. I had heard on another WAMC program that conjunctivitis has wiped out about half of the house finch population. Now, I had noticed the numbers of house finches dramatically declined. The person on that other show mentioned that it's important to disinfect bird feeders, but didn't mention how to disinfect them, what to use, or how often to disinfect them.
Huh.
And so now I'd love to know your expert opinion about this.
Well, you're absolutely right. The house finch situation was something that kind of, well, you could almost have predicted it, given the nature of the house finch incursion into the Northeast. They're not native to the area. They were introduced illegally, I might add, but managed, surprisingly, to be able to survive the Northeast. They're from the Southwest. They're more of a Mexican border species. They did quite well here in the Northeast, and as the name suggests, they are attracted to be around houses.
Okay.
And they are drawn to bird feeders. There was a, and still is, but it's quite not so prevalent anymore, but there was an infection that got to the house finches, affected their eyes, caused them a blindness that made them vulnerable to predation, and also caused them to starve. They just weren't able to find food. The numbers did decline rapidly. The surviving population may have a sense of immunity, I'm not sure, or just by their isolation were not in contact with conjunctivitis infection. The treatment is recommended, yes, that they are drawn to feeders, and that's probably where the disease is spread most readily. There are other avenues for it, but yes, cleaning the bird feeders. Now, what I would do is a mild solution of chlorine in water, just a mild solution, something that you would use around household utensils and the like.
Okay.
And on a rag, and just wipe down the surface areas of the bird feeders periodically. maybe once every 2 weeks or so if you're heavy use feeders, perhaps a little bit more often. If it's lightly used or if this, by the way, the conjunctivitis does not seem to affect other bird species. So if you're not having house finches at your feeder, then just keep an eye out, so to speak, and act appropriately. But if there are house finches coming, then, you know, those extra precautions are warranted.
Can you state categorically that you won't be able to pick up conjunctivitis yourself by cleaning off the feeder?
That is correct. The history of this affliction is that it is restricted to house finches and may spread over into goldfinches or purple finches, but that does not seem to be a direct link. There seems to be just a natural occurrence of this sort of wild occurring disease, but it is not, best of my knowledge, in a long history and quite the frequency of the occurrence suggests that there is no communication to people.
Okay, that's great.
One more semi-related question. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts about how often bird baths should be cleaned? I know some people who change the water every single day and some people who let it get really pretty yucky.
Well, birds know the difference. I would not worry about that so much. My big concern with that would be during the warmer months, mosquitoes, and during the colder months, freezing. Mm-hmm. Aside from that, I really would not put too much attention into it. If you like a clean setting outdoors, then go right ahead and purge the water periodically. But I wouldn't fret over it.
Okay. All right. Joanna, thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. Rich Guthrie is here. And let's go over to line two and Dorcas in Olive Bridge.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. I live, if you were a bird flying like an eagle or a hawk, maybe 5 minutes from the Ashokan Dam.
Yes.
I'm right against the mountain. And every time I go to Kingston, there are mockingbirds down there and singing their hearts out, and they are lovely.
Mm-hmm.
How do I get them to come to my house?
Food.
What kind of food?
Well, mockingbirds are southern bird species that have moved. Their population has expanded northward over the last few decades.
Yeah.
And
grits, something like that?
Well, that would be good, but they wouldn't accept it.
Okay, all right.
But berries. They like berries. They are a berry-eating bird. And one of the factors that might have influenced their expansion is the rapid increase of and proliferation of, and I don't recommend going this route because it is an invasive species, and that is the multiflora rose.
I've got thousands of them.
Really?
Yeah.
I won't come?
Well, that's the problem with multiflora rose is that you're in for a dime, you're in for a dollar with that whole bunch. But then the next thing is that you're at a high elevation there. They're still, I think, acclimating to the northern climes here. So I would not we'd have to be very, very patient. It took them a long time to come up the Hudson Valley as far as Kingston and beyond. And they're going to work their way up the Esopus Creek and someday may meet you in Olive Bridge. But I would not run the camera battery down waiting.
Oh, okay.
So good luck with that.
What about whippoorwills? Can I get one back?
That's up to them. The whippoorwill is a story of a different sort. They're one of a population crash or a severe decline in this area.
Do we know why?
We do not know why. It seems somewhat parallel with the reduction in numbers of the nighthawks. They're both related, whippoorwill and nighthawk. They're night-flying, insect-eating birds that, for some reason, their numbers have just dropped dramatically. Now, whippoorwill used to be a common bird in many backyards in the Northeast.
For about the entire 70s.
Yes, and then slowly but surely, the numbers dwindled and they disappeared from familiar places. And we don't know what's the cause of the decline, and so we don't really have a good solution. I have a couple of suggestions. You know, their food is insects, night-flying insects, and those critters seem to be drawn to lights. And there may be a decline of night-flying insects because of the proliferation of night lighting that seems to suck up the population of these moths, primarily moths, the larger moths of night.
So, in other words, put some lights up, and you may attract the insects, which will attract the birds.
Unfortunately, quite the reverse. It will attract the insects, will cause their demise, which will cause a decline in the number of insect-eating bird species.
What about land use? Because we used to have way more open fields because it was farmed,
well,
and they don't make a nest.
You're right about that. And land use is a factor, but I don't know if that is a determining factor in the whippoorwill population. They, in some areas, they do okay in built-up areas. Specifically speaking, down on Long Island, New York, there is a stable population down in there, and in New Jersey and further south. So I don't know that. That certainly is a contributing factor. They don't do well with backyard cats and other disturbances in the night.
Thank you very much for the call, Dorcas. Bill Guthrie is our guest. No, Rich Guthrie, who's been on 1,000 times, is our guest. Rich Guthrie. It's the Bird Show, don't you know? Let's take a break. 1-800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from de Blas' Chamber Music Series, opening its 83rd season with 3 Sunday afternoon concerts through November 22nd at the Hyde, Glens Falls, New York. deblas-chamber-music.org. Destination Williamstown, a calendar of curated events in the Northern Berkshires, culture, college, cows. destinationwilliamstown.org. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, celebrating its 15th anniversary with an evening of special events on Saturday, October 17th, skidmore.edu/Tang. HMT at the Spa Little Theater, presenting A Chorus Line, weekends October 9th through 25th at the Spa Little Theater, Saratoga Spa State Park, homemadetheater.org. And Poughkeepsie Farm Project's 8th Annual Soupa Bowl, a celebration of local soups, music, and community this Sunday, farmproject.org.
Say, the fun drive is coming. Did you know that? Monday morning, 6 a.m., Alan will be in the big chair, and we get going with the fun drive, and the lockbox is open now. We're making a big dent in the on-air drive. So far, we've raised $166,086 in our lockbox, and you can feed the lockbox now. Every dollar we raise between now and the start of the drive counts on minute one. You can pledge online at WAMC.org or give us a call at 800-323-9262. Or you can even mail in your check, according to Felicia Burke, 318 Central Avenue, Albany, 12206. But if you want to feed the lockbox now, WAMC.org. Everything counts on minute one of the drive. Richie, excited for the drive?
Hey, let's go.
You know what? Jessica and I, you know, we pitch in the 12:30 to 2. And we often will give bird books away, or we'll talk. Your name comes up from time to time.
Uh-oh.
No, it's okay.
Okay, good.
It's okay. And
okay,
people
good.
Can hear it.
Look, put an oar in the water. I'm glad to help.
So you have some events coming up.
We do, yes. This weekend, as a matter of fact, tomorrow evening, is the beginning of this year's annual convention with the New York State birders from all around the state and
okay,
beyond.
We discussed this last time, and so now it's finally here.
Here it is, and it begins tomorrow evening. It's at the tomorrow evening's program will be at the New York State Museum.
And you're talking, right?
I am.
About parrots,
I'm
right?
I'm going to be not about parrots, but
no.
We're going to talk about eBird.
Ah.
We got Ian Davies from the Cornell University and I are going to talk about the mysteries and machinations and also the hints and kinks of eBird.
Okay, now eBird is from Cornell Cooperative Extension?
National Audubon Society.
Same.
And the Cornell Cooperative Extension.
Okay.
Work with birders around the world. And this program, you'll see how much around the world this whole eBird thing has gone to.
So what is that? What is
it's eBird? It's an online citizen science participation website or active interactive site.
So if you spot a bird, you put it in the eBird.
You can enter it into eBird, and right away it becomes part of a documentation, an archive documentation of that bird's occurrence. And we can keep track of things like the house finch population in the Northeast.
Right. Now, you'll be talking about this tomorrow night. And my first question, if I was in the audience, was, hey, listen, what if me and my buddies, we have 4 or 5 beers and we want to make a joke and we say, you know, we saw.
That's why I'm there.
But so how does eBird filter out all the jokers?
I are one of them, reviewers. I sit there and and others involved, we see the reports coming in and we look at them and we sort of say, this is good, pass it on.
Right.
This is good, pass it on. A lot of that's done automatically. We have these filters that will screen out the bizarre stuff.
So if I put it like I saw a penguin, you know, on Quail Street, it'll automatically be filtered.
We'll have a serious look at it.
Okay.
Because you never know. I mean, birds have wings. Well, penguins have feet.
Right.
Happy feet. We'll look at that and we'll evaluate it for the possibilities and be in communication with the observer, if warranted, to check and make sure that they were accurate, correct, and help them help the observer with the entry. And then Ian Davis will talk about the whole business, the whole thing about eBird around the world.
Yeah.
And how to work it best for you. There are so many aspects of it that the backyard birder can put to use and make happen.
So terrific. This begins tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night.
Okay.
And then on Saturday there will be field trips. I'll be leading a field trip myself to Peebles Island State Park, and there will be other field trips to other great birding areas in the Capital District of New York.
Okay.
And then there will be the dinner banquet. Speaker will be John Dunn, the author of many, many bird books, and also a birding adventure raconteur that will entertain us with his knowledge and experiences and his behavior around the bird world.
Okay.
Which will be interesting in itself.
That sounds like fun.
Yes. And then Sunday there'll be some more field trips and more workshops and paper sessions and vendor displays. I know our friend from Saratoga Springs, the Wild Birds Unlimited, will be there.
Terrific. Nancy will be there?
Nancy will be there.
Oh, great.
And so we have lots to look forward to. That begins tomorrow night. Now, for information about it,
you can
go to the HMBC, the Hudson Mohawk Bird Club website, hmbc.net.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there'll be just all sorts of information, the schedules, the activities, and registration information.
All right. I know you have a couple of other events, but let's go back to the phones, and we'll catch some more of the happenings with Rich Guthrie in a bit. Let's go to Kirk in Canajoharie. Kirk.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
My question is about purple martins and how successful have people been in attracting them to this area?
Well, Kirk, thank you very much. That's a good question because it's something that I think has been overblown by birdhouse aficionados. They would like to put out purple martin houses. They like to put them out there, but the purple martins are really not taking well to this area.
Why is that?
I don't know. It's another one of these mystery birds that was around more so in the past, another aerial insect-eating bird species that has declined in numbers, and that's a little, a parallel trend. I hate to see that there is a real connection between them and the whippoorwills and the nighthawks, but there appears to be the purple martins used to be more numerous in the area. They're a colonial nester. They like these bird nest boxes. And there are only a very few colonies in the Capital District that I know of, and none of them west of Albany. The few that are here are one down in New Paltz. Thank you to the New York Thruway Authority that maintains one right next to the Thruway exit in New Paltz.
Oh, great.
There's another one up in Saratoga Springs on Saratoga Lake. And then some other ones up along Lake Champlain. And as far as I know, those are the few that are around here, although there's plenty of opportunity for them because people do put up purple martin nest boxes. They look nice. They have a nice suggestion to them. But the purple martins are just not here to occupy them.
Okay.
Yeah, I have one myself. I haven't put it up yet, and I have the literature and the tapes to try to attract them.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's my understanding that west of the Rockies, or east of the Rockies, I should say, that you have to put up a house to attract them. West of the Rockies is the only place that they live in a natural habitat.
Well, that's
is that correct?
Yeah, that's mostly true. There are a few that are traditionalists east of the Rockies, but the simple answer is that unfortunately they don't have the critical number to reestablish new colonies, and we're lucky to hold on to the colonies that we have. So. I would encourage, you know, they do like to be nearby water bodies. If you have a lake, a pond, or the Mohawk River near you, I would suggest that that would is one of the criteria that they seem to like. But there are more, and some of them are mysterious to us.
Kirk, thanks a lot for the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. We talk birds every month or so with Rich Guthrie, and the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us, voxpopwamc.org. And Rich, this one came in via email. This is from Sharon from Stillwater, who writes, "Turkey vultures lived and nested in my barn for the past few years until I closed the window opening with a door this month. The barn restorer said they make a mess. Will they relocate okay? Is there a nesting box I can make? Do they migrate south? I already miss watching them soar in the sky and perch on my roof." That's from Sharon.
Sharon, I'm with you. However, your restorer is correct. They are a messy bird. Their diet is roadkill and backfield woodchucks and the like.
So they
have takeout dinner. Oh, good.
Yeah.
They have takeout dinners they bring home, and the leftovers are not well cared for and treated. So they do accumulate. They are messy creatures, but there's no problem with the turkey vulture population in the Northeast. They seem to be proliferating quite and managing on their own.
Okay.
They like nesting in cliff sides and crags and rocks, and also abandoned buildings, like you had vacant buildings.
Okay.
So I don't know of any successful nest box program that would worked. I would invite you to try and keep us posted.
All right. Thank you, Sharon from Stillwater, for that. We'll get right back to the phones at 1-800-348-2551. But first, this one from Mimi on Facebook. "Now that our feathered friends are heading south, should you take down old nests?" That's from Mimi.
It doesn't matter.
Really?
Yeah. Leave them up. Take them down. One way or the other will make very little difference. Most birds do not reuse an old nest. Some hawks do. Old hawk nests or crow nests will be used by subsequent hawk species or generations, or taken over by great horned owls or the like. But most birds, the robins, the blue jays, the catbirds and the like, goldfinches.
Yeah.
Will rebuild a new nest next year. That's part of their bonding ritual, their courtship ritual. So take them down. One thing about that is you're really not allowed to keep them. If you take there are federal laws.
Now, why is there a federal law that says you can't take down an unused nest?
That goes back a long way. It goes back to when people were actually in the business of robbing eggs and selling eggs back and forth, and the business of egg trading was quite a big business back in the day, and it was detrimental
egg
to
trading?
Some of our it's like collecting. People collected bird eggs. And to the detriment of some bird species. Many bird species made no difference. I mean, one or two eggs here or there didn't make a difference.
Yeah.
But it got to the point where it became a serious problem.
Okay.
And so the federal government, in conjunction with the Canadian government, and now other governmental bodies, Mexico and even Russia and Japan, and now prohibit the collecting of eggs and egg material and nests.
Wow.
For that very reason, for the protection of the bird populations as a whole. So it is not, actually a violation of federal and international law. And
so don't
State
take them
law.
Down, or you can take them down, but you can't keep them.
You can not keep them.
So
now, whether or not
what do you do with them,
down,
then, if you take them down?
Just leave them there.
If you're allowed to take them down but not keep them, what happens to them?
You know, that's a tricky line because, you know, I don't want to say that it's okay to take them down because the law, if you're going to get into the minutiae of it.
Yes,
all,
we are, sir.
They say
yes,
you're not allowed to disturb the nests, even though if they're abandoned. If, you know, it's like a feather. You're not allowed to pick up a feather from the sidewalk, even though it's just lying there.
What?
Yes. And
there's a law that says that?
A very serious law, too. And that, again, is for good reason. That goes back to the day when people were shooting and collecting birds and putting them on mantelpieces or in these old Victorian parlor displays. It got out of hand. They were shooting some of the bird species almost to the verge of extinction.
Yeah, yeah.
For millinery purposes, for the hats,
right,
for the ladies. You know, a bizarre but popular fashion statement back in the day, back in the old Victorian Edwardian era.
So the bottom line for Mimi is leave the nests alone.
Leave the unless it is like a phoebe nest or a swallow nest that is in the way or unattractive. Well, then you know, clean up behind it and you know, just do it without malice.
All right, okay. Let's go to Lou in Altamont. Lou, you're on with Rich Guthrie.
Howdy. I have two questions. The first one is, starting early spring, I ended up with what I think was two pairs of pileated woodpeckers who stayed almost exclusively on the suet feeders, which were done with a relatively inexpensive peanut from one of our major chain stores. They disappeared about 2 weeks ago. I think I saw young. By that, I mean I saw something looked like an inch smaller, and they just, they're all gone. I don't hear them. I don't see them.
Okay. Well, it sounds to me like an extended family group, mom, pop, and the kids. And now, pileated woodpeckers, or pileated, either way, either or both, is one of these bird species that has adapted well to human human presence.
Yeah.
They moved into the neighborhood from the forest and are quite comfortable being around people now. They're quite large. They're quite attractive. They're rather dramatic and spectacular woodpecker species. I suspect that you had a family group there that is now dispersing. Their kids are getting kicked out of the territory, find your own place, and the parents are withdrawn to the woods. They no longer need that extra food supply to keep the kids going. I bet they'll be back. It'll just be a matter of time. They're just in the business of maybe reestablishing or affirming the boundaries of their... They got to set up winter territories now, and I suspect that's what they're doing. So they're busy guarding the borders.
Thank you. Now, the second question.
Yes, sir.
Last night, I think the bear did a visit.
Yeah.
Which means I have to start pulling in the feeders.
Yeah.
Is there anything that I can put in the seed, not necessarily in the feeders, but I have some platforms as well, that will keep the bears out, such as cayenne pepper?
Yeah. Well, you can. And I suspect the cayenne pepper is what's used on some of the sunflower seed mixes to keep the squirrels unhappy, discourage them from coming to the feeder. And it could also work on bears. But if it doesn't work on bears, then they have perhaps ways of getting even. And And you know, once they find a bird feeder, they become very what can you say, tenacious. When it and I would not mess with them. If you have bears coming to the feeder, I suspect they're coming at night. And if that's the case, bring the bird feeders down or bring them in at night and close up season until they go into hibernation. Right now, they're aggressively trying to fatten up for the winter hibernation. So they'll do whatever they can to find an easy meal.
Yes, and by the way, according to NCON, if you leave your feeders out with bears known in the neighborhood, you are charged with feeding the population.
And that is correct, and that is a violation. And you really don't want, common sense says, don't mess with them. I mean, you really don't want to have an aggressive, upset, unhappy bear in your backyard. You go out to take the trash out, and you'll be face-to-face with one of these things.
Ain't fun. That's not good. Let's go to Lauren and Troy. Lauren, you're on with Rich Guthrie.
Yes, good afternoon. I am calling because after 11 years in our house, we have a little, I think it's a downy woodpecker, visiting our exterior and actually pecking at the house. It seems to happen more on cloudy afternoons. I don't know. I've just tended to notice that. Rainy days, I didn't know if that has something to do with maybe the insects or something of that nature. But, we've been here for years. They've been in the woods. There are plenty of trees around the house. But suddenly they've taken a liking to, and we have siding. It's not
It's wood. Aluminum siding?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Well, we know why then, Rich. It's a mating thing, right?
It usually is, but again, now they're setting up winter territory, and it can be part of that. It's really more of a territorial thing. Woodpeckers like to find resonant surfaces to drum, as they call it. And that is to beat their head against it until it makes this drumming sound. And that broadcasts to other woodpeckers occupied.
Yeah.
Yes. Stay out.
I hadn't heard you mention that before. Well, it certainly does drum.
Yes.
I'll tell you, it is resonant. So
yes.
I guess we just try to get out there before there are too many little dents.
Oh, right. Well, it's better than the scenario where we've heard other people call in where they're actually going after insects in the wood. And that's not pleasant. Now, this is a happy sound. You know, this is music to their ears. Maybe not to yours, but to theirs. Again, it may be part of the winter territory establishment. So let's hope that once the rules are defined, the neighbors understand that this guy will go back to banging on trees in a quiet manner.
Right, because we do have quite a few of the woodpeckers and seems like a healthy bird population here. Like I said, it's very tree-covered. We're up on the hills in Troy. So.
Well, that's a nice area. And, all I could say is good luck and have fun with him and understand what he's all about. It's harmless and wish them well.
Great. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks, Lauren. Let's take a break. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. The home stretch is on the way.
Support for WAMC comes from Capital Wine, corner of State and Lark Streets in the heart of Albany, offering local, domestic, and international wines, spirits, and special orders. Tastings Fridays 6 to 9, CapitalWineAlbany.com. The Department of Theater Arts at SUNY New Paltz, opening the fall 2015 season with Joseph Goodrich's suspense-filled romantic mystery, Panic, October 1st through 18th, newpaltz.edu/theatre. The 1850 House and Tavern, Rosendale, New York. A neighborhood tavern with a waterfront deck and a porch on Main Street. Microbrew beers, local spirits, and pizza from their clay oven. The1850house.com. The 2015 Saratoga Showcase of Homes, celebrating 20 years of new homes from builders in the Saratoga region, weekends through October 4th. SaratogaShowcaseofHomes.com for tickets. And Planned Parenthood Mid-Hudson Valley, for over 80 years, advocating for policies that will protect women's rights into the future. ppmhv.org for more information.
You feel like you're on a Quinn Martin production. That's music from Mannix. Remember that old show, Mannix, back in the 70s, Rich?
Old show, Mannix.
Yeah, good stuff. It's a Vox Pop on WAMC. We talk birds and old TV shows with Rich Guthrie every once in a while. Number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Now, let's see. Pat is on the line. Pat, are you really on Bay Shore, Long Island right now?
We are driving up to Albany for the conference tomorrow.
Oh, cool. Oh, that's great.
And I have a question for Rich. Rich, Shelley and I are coming up, and we would like to know if you have a good location for us for Philadelphia Vireo.
Ah, Philadelphia Vireo. Thank you, Pat.
And perhaps to make it more interesting for your other listeners, just a beautiful park to go birding in and enjoy the fall migration.
Yes. Well, I highly recommend Peebles Island State Park on Saturday morning, beginning at 7:30. And if you're there, I'll be glad to lead you to show you around Peebles Island State Park, part of the conference's many field trips. There are others to other birding hotspots in the Capital District, led by experts that will start out early in the morning, and some will be back by 10 o'clock and some back by noon.
Mm.
So fingers crossed, and there we hope to find the rather rare and secretive Philadelphia Vireo. Philadelphia Vireo is not really from Philadelphia. It's one of those several birds that have this kind of like odd, when they named them, were found down there then, but they really belong up in the Adirondacks in Canada, of course, the muskegs. But they do pass through the area. They're hard to find. And Henry Hill Collins, back in his book, used to say you could judge a birder's field activity experience by the number of Philadelphia vireos he or she may see in the course of the year, which is usually one to none. So
do you have any hope that you'll actually see one?
Always hoping, and I'm fully expecting. It's a little late for Philadelphia vireos, but, you know, we'll have good eyes looking.
All right.
Thank you.
Pat, thanks a lot for the call. Now, Rich, you have a couple more events you wanted to mention.
Yes, indeed. My good friend Alan Mapes, the former director of environmental education with Environmental Conservation Department, and I will be teaming up with the Adirondack Mountain Club on October 13th at the West Albany Fire Hall on Albany Shaker Road for a program about birds beginning at 6:30. That's on October 13th. That's a Tuesday evening, as I recall, at 6:30 at the West Albany Fire Hall. Alan Mapes and I will be going over the thing about birds. And then also on Saturday, October 17th, the North River Friends of Clearwater are having a cruise down the Hudson River. And I'll be on board to narrate all about the eagles, the migrating waterfowl along the Hudson River corridor, and other such birds. That will be on Saturday, October 17th at 3:30 on board the Dutch Apple down by the Snow Dock.
Oh, great. Okay, that's awesome. Yeah,
it is. And you can find out more about that by going to the clearwater.org. Okay. site on and look for the Sloop Clearwater activities, and there you'll find more information about our cruise down the Hudson River on October 17th.
Fantastic, Rich Guthrie. And the phone number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Before we get back to the line, here's one that came in on our website. That's WAMC.org, where you can make your pledge to the lockbox, by the way, if you feel like it. This one is from Michael, who says a chukar partridge. Is that the way you say it? A chukar partridge? Chukar partridge found its way to my property in southern Washington County last week. I understand this bird is not native to our area. Any idea how it could have gotten here? And that's from Michael.
Well, chukars are a small quail-like bird that's native to Eastern Europe and Western Asia, the steppe regions of the Caucasian Mountains and the Aral Mountains of Europe.
Okay.
They are introduced into this area years and years ago and released quite unsuccessfully. They just have not adapted to the North American environment.
Okay.
However, they are readily available for bird fanciers to raise and release. And people do that. People raise them in their backyards. They get away. They sometimes are released by sports clubs, Boy Scouts, 4-H, that sort of thing, into the environment. I mean, their future does not bode well for them because they have, through deliberate efforts, have not succeeded, and the likelihood that these subsequent ones will not either.
All right. Let's go to the phones again. And Dane in Fairfield, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I had a couple observations that I kind of wanted to put, and I had a question.
Okay.
I thought flickers were getting rather uncommon now. It seemed like there were fewer than there have been. And I noticed day before yesterday, there were 16 of them that landed in my on our lawn and were pecking around. I was quite shocked to even see them. I was wondering what you thought of that.
Well, flickers are a type of woodpecker that have come out of the trees. They're a ground-feeding woodpecker, surprisingly enough. They like ants, they like grubs, and probably take their flicker share of worms from the ground.
Okay.
Now, they are also a migratory bird. For a woodpecker, that's a little unusual. Most of our woodpeckers are sedentary, year-round residents, but the flicker migrates through. And now they're migrating through, and they tend to migrate in clumps. Groups of flickers travel presumably along together. They keep an eye on one another. They're daytime migrants. And when they find a favorable spot, such as your yard, they come in and feast around for a while. Then a few days, they'll be up and gone. And they probably are increasing somewhat in numbers. Unfortunately, at the demise of our ash trees, I think they're benefiting from
the
decline of the ash called by the emerald ash borer. And I predict that in the near future, we'll see more and more flickers and more red-bellied woodpeckers and even more red-headed woodpeckers due, unfortunately, to the decline of the various ash species, which is seems to be spreading west to east.
What does the ash have to do with it?
The ash is a tree that's being invaded by the emerald ash borer, which is killing the ash tree, which in the process is creating habitat for more insects, more wood-eating insects, and the flickers and other woodpeckers are drawn to that food source.
Aha. Uh-huh. Dane, thanks a lot for the call. Our guest today, Rich Guthrie, and Gary in West Haven, Vermont. Gary, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon, Ray and
Hello.
Rich. comment about a woodcock.
All right.
Okay.
There was one here late this summer, and I assumed it was nesting. It stayed around for a long time, you know, time enough for it to have hatched out her brood.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing bird. She would come out and feed during the daytime, and my wife was able to get within feet of her,
mm-hmm.
and she got some great, great pictures.
Oh, good.
I observed it one afternoon, and believe it or not, you're gonna chuckle. I watched it for a solid 2 hours.
Chuckle.
And I would say that it penetrated the ground with its beak over 10,000 times. I could not believe the number of times that she would probe in the ground.
Well, let me just help out here a little bit. The woodcock is a type of sandpiper, believe it or not, that has given up the shore and come to the woods. They are a very well-camouflaged plumage bird species, which is why I suspect you or your wife and both were able to get close enough to it, because many woodcock believe you can't see them. And most of the time, they're right. So they're not, it's not that they're tolerant, it's just that they haven't felt threatened by the close approach people and the like. They do, however, they're very active feeders. They feed with a very long bill by probing into soft ground, mud especially, and they probe down there with a very flexible tip, a very sensitive, flexible tip, and they reach around and looking for grubs and earthworms and the like, which they'll just pull out from 2 or 3 inches down. And they have to do this quite frequently, you know, striking many times and hoping to score a few. And so you go around in the morning after they're usually feeding at night, which I find it interesting that yours is coming out during the daytime. They're crepuscular, they're evening or early morning dwellers. Really quite a remarkable bird species, American woodcock. So you could go around in the morning and look at all of these needle holes that they've poked into the ground during the course of the night, these little sewing machine holes into
the ground. Do they make sounds?
Oh, they do. They have a wonderful little courtship sound.
Oh, I'd love to hear it.
Oh, it goes something like meep.
Really?
Meep.
Really?
Yeah.
So it sounds like an IBM mainframe from the 70s.
Meep.
Okay, fine. Hey, Gary, thanks a lot for the call.
And they have a courtship flight that consists of, it sounds like a spaceship landing.
All right. Really?
Well, that's more like the snipe. It's close relative.
Well, Martha's on the line. Martha, what do you make of all this?
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
You're on.
Yes, thank you. I have a question. We have a hummingbird feeder outside with the homemade sugar and water, and we have a red-bellied woodpecker who has spent most of the summer with us feeding from it, and we wondered if that was an odd behavior.
Well, yes and no. And thank you for that. The red-bellied woodpecker, like the earlier caller with the pileated woodpecker that was coming to the suet feeder, they're all opportunistic feeders. They will watch other birds and try out something. Most birds will do that. They see a lot of feeding activity, and they'll say, I wonder what's happening there.
Yeah.
And they'll go and try it out. If they like it, they'll be back. If they don't, well, try something else. And woodpeckers have this propensity to do this. The pileated with the suet and your red-bellied woodpecker. And other woodpeckers, a downy woodpecker, will do the same thing, is come to a hummingbird feeder and lap up the sweet sugar water.
Just once, or will it come back for more?
Well, once they find out that it ain't so bad, they'll be back.
I'll be darned.
And, you know, they can't pass up a good free meal. Now, which reminds me, if you do have hummingbird feeders, please, you know, keep them up. Keep them going. We have, right now, the hummingbirds, most of our hummingbirds have moved through. And this is a time with hummingbirds and other birds that the rarities begin to show up. The ones that have come the long distance from British Columbia, Manitoba, or wrong direction from Arizona, New Mexico, and end up here in the Northeast. And we're always, you know, that's one of the fun things about birding is the discovery of a rare species. And it's not a coincidence that most of the rare species turn up in people's backyards at a bird feeder or hummingbird feeder or along in a park where birders congregate, recognize that they're a little different. A lot of birds, these unusual birds, go totally unnoticed because there's no one around to either know to see them or to appreciate that they're different from the rest of the flock.
Yeah.
But backyards and feeders, that's the place to go. And that's where eBird comes in real handy because we get word of that through your reporting.
Okay, so that was Martha in Bloomfield. Now, Beth in Voorheesville had to hang up earlier. But following up on that, she wanted to know when is the appropriate time to take down or stop filling the hummingbird feeders?
November 15th.
November 15th?
And beyond. But, you know, I say that a little tongue-in-cheek. I know that an Anna's hummingbird showed up in Binghamton, New York, sometime around Thanksgiving some years ago.
Okay.
And we get some reports of hummingbirds right into December. So it's up to you. If you, it's a little tricky, but keep the hummingbird feeders going right up, and there's no reason to take them down.
Okay.
If a hummingbird happens by, well, let us know right away.
All right. Let's go to Valerie in Wappingers Falls. Valerie, you're on.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good.
I wanted to mention that I participate in Project Feeder Watch.
Oh, good.
Which is a great citizen science that's through the Cornell, and that's a lot of fun. It's now is the time to sign up because it'll be starting soon and going all through the winter, and you keep a tally of the birds that frequent your backyard and your bird feeders and your different attractions. And I also wanted to mention that I've maintained a bird bath out in my backyard, which I can watch when I'm sitting at my desk,
mm-hmm.
and we often get, I get a lot of birds during the summer in the late afternoon, and sometimes as many as a dozen bluebirds all going around it and taking baths and having a good time. But a couple weeks ago, I saw a female summer tanager.
Whoa, all
which
right.
is a first and only, and I was wondering how rare it is to see one of those.
Did you hear my reaction to it?
Yeah.
Okay. That says it. Oh.
It's rare.
It is. The summer tanager is related to our scarlet tanager. The summer tanager is a southern bird species that, along with a whole bunch of others, seem to be moving their range northward. They're making some slight incursions into New York State, and one in Wappingers Falls at any time would be highly unusual. I'm wondering if you managed to get any photographs of it.
I wish I had. I was on the phone with someone at the time, mm-hmm. and I wanted to say, "Oh my goodness, it's a summer tanager!" Ah. I didn't because I didn't know if the person talking to would appreciate that. And it was mere moments, and bird, you know, was gone.
This is where the job.
Like my excitement for the day.
Well, definitely, and it would be exciting for anybody in our region to see a summer tanager, or for that matter, somebody in South Carolina. Yes, they are very, very rare. The occurrence of summer tanager is infrequent in our region. It's rare enough even south of us on Long Island, Staten Island, New York, our southern extremes. So, yes, well, missed opportunity, let's call it that.
Yeah, not much I could do when I'm talking on my
absolutely.
Phone camera.
I understand. Yes, I understand.
Well, Valerie, thanks a lot. We're out of time here. We appreciate the call.
Oh, great. Thank you so much.
Sure. Thank you.
Bye now. Well, I apologize to Michelle in Mount Tremper and Jack in Glenville and Elizabeth in Albany and Ray in Stone Ridge. No time. The lesson here is call very early in the program, and we'll get you in.
Yes.
Now it's too late. Rich Guthrie, once again, your blog at the Times Union is...
TimesUnion.com. Look up the blogs, birding, slant birding.
Okay, and you'll find more information about all these events there?
or hmbc.net.
Okay.
And also, yes, on the blog, I'll be putting up these upcoming events with the Friends of North River, Friends of Clearwater, and also the Adirondack Mountain Club.
Rich Guthrie, thanks a lot. We'll see you after the fun drive. Thanks for being here.
Yip-de-doo.
Support comes from the Adirondack Museum Blue Mountain Lake, presenting the Roads and Rails exhibition, closing October 12th after 47 seasons. AdirondackMuseum.org for details. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive media displays, and commercial casework for corporate interiors, museum installations, and trade shows. EmpireExhibits.com. Fulton County Tourism in the Southern Adirondack Park, fishing on their 44 lakes, camping, hiking, biking, boating, craft fair, weekends, and autumn events. 44 lakes, 44 choices, 44lakes.com. And Bodie Spa, Yoga and Salon, Hudson, daily yoga classes, plus haircuts and color, massage, body treatments and facials, scheduling hair and makeup services for weddings. BodieHolisticSpa.com. Thanks again for listening. Thanks for calling. Thanks to Rich Guthrie, who was here in the studio. Thanks to Zach, who's on the other side of the glass. Thanks to Deb Malik, who answered the calls. Jessica Blaustein Marshall, our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's a Food Friday. Stay tuned now for news.